Good morning. This is a meeting of the Cambridge License Commission, Monday, June 19th, 9 a.m. at 831 Massachusetts Avenue, Cornelia M. Vicente Conference Room in Cambridge. With us today are the commissioners, Brent Larrabee, Gary Mahoney, and Nicole Moretti. First matter on the agenda, Chisumba DBA Felipe Zacharia, holder of an all-alcoholic beverages license at 21 Brattle Street. Mr. Brent, I don't think we'll take testimony, but just in case.
I'm sorry?
If you can stand up and raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you will give is the full truth and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Sit down. Good morning. If you could please state your names for the record.
Attorney Kevin Crane, K-E-V-I-N-C-R-A-N-E, 104 Mount Auburn Street in Cambridge. I represent the licensee.
Thank you.
Tom Brush, B-R-U-S-H, from Felipe's Taqueria at 21 Brattle Street.
Thank you. And sorry, I forgot to mention we are being audio and tape recorded today. We're going to start with the matter that we continue the disciplinary hearing of June 7th regarding the allegations of overcrowding on May 19th, 2017, and overcrowding, no crowd manager, documentation, blocked exits, and other violations of the fire code on May 20, 2017. Now, I think last we left it, Counselor, you wanted to give closing statement, or I don't know if there's questions that we want to ask before. I went through all the documents that you gave us, so I don't particularly have any other questions. I think they're self-explanatory, but if you want to give yours.
Could I just ask him a couple of questions?
Sure.
Mr. Brush, since May 19th, how has your restaurant operated?
We have operated on a reduced capacity of about 40% from the 20th on. We removed tables and chairs from the front of the restaurant in order to make sure we did not go over 62. It was the only way we could keep the capacity at 62 or below is by removing those seats. If people sat in them, there would have been nowhere for people to come in and buy food at the serving line. So it has greatly impacted my business in terms of sales for the last month.
Okay. So that's since the 20th?
That's since the 20th, correct. That would have been beginning on the 21st, I believe, or was it? That sat, that it was, that it was a Friday night, so beginning that next Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And since May 19th, what have the changes been as far as counting the number of people in your restaurant?
We've had security with counters at the front door and also up on the mezzanine, other than times of rain when there's nobody, you know, when the restaurant's dead, but anytime there's any traffic whatsoever, we've had to have security at the front door and up on the mezzanine to control the number of people going up on the roof, and also basically to control each level, since our seating is specifically identified by ground floor, mezzanine, and roof. Those limitations are on each floor, so trying to manage traffic going between the floors has been extremely difficult, and it's just been an added labor that we have to have in order to comply with this reduced capacity by 40%.
Okay, now just focusing on May 20th, and there was some testimony by Captain Arsenal that he had, in his report, he recites that was 75 people seating there. Has it ever been more than the 62 seats on the first floor?
No, there has not.
Okay. And how long have you been in operation there?
In that location, 2.5 years.
Okay. Have you ever had any violations?
No, I have not.
Okay, thank you. Well, just in closing, Madam Chair and Commissioners, on the May 19th violation, I don't think there's any dispute that there was an overcrowding situation. On the May 20th one, I'm not sure whether, and I would submit that there wouldn't be substantial evidence anyway, which is the standard here, that there was an overcrowding situation. The Captain Arsenault's testimony regarding the first floor was that there was 75 seats, but he did say then that it was estimated up and down 10. And if we take his report, which is a 75 seating and 65 standing, again, this, and I can understand it's not a exact science as far as the standing, as far as the counting of the people, particularly in a restaurant like this where people are moving around. But if we take the figures that Mr. Brush thought was his legal capacity, which was 62 and 60 at that time, and then look at Captain Arsenault's figure of 75 and 65, also taking the testimony of Mr. Brush that there was never more than 62 seats there, the overcapacity allegation on the first floor is slim. There's no question that even if we, on the mezzanine section, that there was no overcrowding, the capacity was 48, and the count there was 41. On the third floor, Captain Arsenault's count was 55 seating and 34 standing, for a total of 89. If we take what Mr. Brush thought was the legally recognizable capacity on that roof at that time, which was 60 and 38, he would have been in compliance. So I think just on the, at least the May 21 allegations, that there was enough of a gray area there where there, a finding of violation wouldn't be supported by substantial evidence. As far as disposition is concerned, I would also note that my client has complied with all the other violations that were alleged with the fire department, particularly, as quickly as possible. None of these were ignored whatsoever. Also, there was a testimony of the investigators that he fully cooperated on both evenings, and I think subsequently as well. And I think, depending upon what you do as far as the violations go, there should also be some consideration that there haven't been any violations whatsoever in the 2.5 years that he's operated at this location, and also that he has endured a substantial hardship over the past month as far as the operation of the facility, and that the revenue naturally has been way down. And it's caused havoc also with his staff as far as, you know, having to lay people off and just totally revamp his operation. And I think that would be a consideration as far as disposition goes. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brush, what was your count on May 20th?
I'm sorry?
What was the count on May 20th?
What was the count?
Yeah.
On which floor? Or which are you saying?
On all floors.
The total capacity?
No, not the total. What was your count on May 20th?
My count on May 20th, which was, I'm sorry, is that the Friday or the Saturday?
That's the Saturday.
The Saturday. What was my count?
Yes.
I didn't do any counting. I mean, I was there.
So no one was taking a count on May 20th?
Oh, no, we were there. We had security at every door, so we were holding our count. At that time, we had, you know, I guess we had nine. At that time, I know that they came in on Friday, and I thought at that time, because I had the plans and the approved plans by the city, that my capacity was 98 on the roof, 48 on the mezzanine, and 122 downstairs. And I had security there to make sure that I didn't go over those numbers. But at that time, on that particular day, that first day, I was under the impression that because I had these stamped, approved drawings, all code qualified, fire, everything else, that I was operating with that capacity. I learned after that, I think it was that Monday that I came in and spoke to the city, that I found out, no, you do not have that capacity. And so, but I was operating as though I still had 98 on the roof.
I understand what your understanding was, Mr. Brush, but I'm trying to get to, your counsel is arguing that you weren't over capacity on May 20th, and I'm asking what the basis for that argument is, and I'm assuming you have some evidence, which would be, what was your count?
Our count would have been the two security guys, one at the front door and one up on mezzanine, keeping it below the 98 on the roof, and it was below the 98 and below the 122 on the first floor, which we had 62 seats. That's all I have in the restaurant. I've never had any more than that in the ground floor. I mean, that's not to say two people couldn't sit on a seat or something, but I'm just saying we only have 162 seats there. And they kept it below 122. It changes by the minute. I mean, literally, people come in and go out. So to say what was my count at that exact moment, it's impossible to say the exact number. People are walking in and out of the door, and people are going between floors constantly in Felipe's. We're not a sit-down restaurant, so there's constant flow within the space.
So when your counsel asked you about what you've changed since the 19th, and you said that you had security with counters, you mean that Were you doing that on the 20th? Did you have security with counters
on Saturday? On Saturday, yes, we did.
And you don't know what those counters said?
What did the counters say?
Yes.
The counters go up and down. We have another issue is we have people going to the bathroom. So somebody's on the floor, and they go down and they come back up.
And I understand
and
this.
So you take
it's
them
a
up,
yes or no question. Do you know what the counter said when the fire department came
in? I don't specifically know what the counter said at that time, but I know we were under our capacity.
Your understood capacity.
My understood capacity, correct.
So the license, what does the license issued by the city state for your capacities?
The license issued by the city states 170 seats. It does not address the issue of the standing or assembly.
Okay, and does it address it by floor?
I believe it does.
So 170.
Correct. Seats.
The word seat isn't used there anywhere. It just says capacity breakdown. First floor 62, second floor 48, roof deck 60, outdoor patio on public property 12. So inside 170 and 12 outdoor patio on public property. Do you currently serve out on the...
No, we do not serve alcohol with that. No, food is served.
Listen to his question.
Do you currently serve outdoor, out on the patio, the public property? Outdoor patio on public property, 12 people. Do you currently utilize that space?
We do.
Okay. I mean, my main concern is that as it says on the license, the means of egress provided are sufficient for the following, and it gives the breakdown by floor. That's, from a fire department standpoint, that's my number one concern, the means of egress. In the event something happened, how quickly and safely people could exit the establishment. And you do acknowledge, as your counsel has stated, you do acknowledge that the place was overcrowded on the 19th, is that correct?
Yes, I do.
And you do acknowledge that there was significant violations with respect to the ANSEL system, portable extinguishers, no crowd manager paperwork, and so forth on the 19th.
Correct? Yes, I am. Okay.
Any more questions?
I do have a letter from my architect who designed.
We don't need that. We don't need that.
Anything else?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. So with regard, are we ready to vote on the overcrowding issue? Okay. So with regard to May 19th, I find a violation. I mean, the first floor, they have 62, they had 72, they were overcrowded by 10. On the second floor, they had 89 with a capacity of 48, they were overcrowded by 41. And on the roof, they had 176 with a capacity of 60. They were overcrowded by 116. I think that's pretty significant. So I would vote a violation, and I would do a suspension on that. Considering that the next day, we have the same situation, and even if we take into account, so let's say Captain testified that there were 75 people sitting, Mr. Brush has testified that he has no more than 62 seats. Even if I give him the 62 seats, there were still 65 people standing. On the second floor, there was no overcapacity. And on the third floor, we have 89 persons with a capacity of 60. Again, another violation. And there were issues in terms of blocking the egresses on the second day as well as together with everything else. So I would vote a violation and a suspension on that too. I would do probably a violation of 3 days on the first one and a violation of 3 more days on the second one for a total of violation of 6 days. That would be my recommendation.
I would amend that to 4 to be served and 3 held in abeyance.
Commissioner Larrabee?
I'll concur on the May 19th violation. I'm not so sure about the May 20th. The new recommendation was 4 to serve.
4 to serve and 2 held in abeyance.
If they're 4 to serve, I would like to see the one that have the least amount of economic impact on the business. I would say, but I would like to work with the licensee to say which days accommodate their business so that they get the punishment, it doesn't as little impact economically as possible.
I would not do that because you don't do it with other licensees. I wouldn't do it with this licensee, but obviously if that's the quorum, that's the quorum, but that wouldn't be my vote.
So it's been the board's practice to have 4 consecutive days?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what it's been. Then I would defer to the board's practice. And I would concur with the fire chief. 4 to serve, 2 held in abeyance. How long is going to hold those in pay?
For a year.
1 year.
So violation, do you want to break it down in terms of how many days with one violation or the other, or do you just want to do violation for everything? 6 days, 4 to be served, and...
Yeah, I mean, after that, I could do 2 and 1, 2 and 1.
If you did 2 and 1, 2 and 1, I think the consecutive part wouldn't be as harmful, rather than having 4 consecutive.
So you
okay,
have...
Okay, he's just given it all 4, he says. 4 consecutive.
So violation... 6 day suspension, 4 to be served, 2 to be held in abeyance.
Would it be possible for us to be involved in the process of which 4 consecutive days?
For 1 year. I mean, I would say a Tuesday through Friday. Those would be my recommendations, and I would, you know, take it. Give probably in 3 weeks, and that gives the licensee enough time to get the schedules together for his employees or whatever, but that would be my recommendation.
How about a Monday through Thursday?
My recommendation is Tuesday through Friday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a calendar? You might as well get the dates that we're choosing them.
The week of July 10th, so the 11th through the 14th.
The second matter on the list is also Felipe, and it is the licensee's request to have the capacity on its license be changed to reflect the standing room occupancy on its floor plan, specifically to add a standing occupancy of 60 on the first floor and 38 on the roof deck. You want to bring him down?
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind getting Commissioner Brown from ISD? We'll just take a quick break. Good morning. Could you please state your names for the record?
My name is David Burns, Senior Building Inspector for the City of Cambridge.
Thank you. And again, Attorney Kevin Crane and Mr. Brush, Tom Brush.
So, Inspector Byrne, I have in front of me a copy of construction documents dated December 20th, 2013, stamped by a registered architect, David Chalinsky, I believe is the name I'm reading on the seal, for Felipe's Taqueria, 21 Brattle Street. Do you have the same document there?
I believe I do.
Okay. So, items 2, 3, and 4 on this plan are labeled as ground egress floor plan, mezzanine egress floor plan, and roof deck egress. Same document?
Yes.
Okay. On the ground floor level, it states assembly, tables and chairs, standing employee, 2,350 square feet, 62 seats, 4 HC, which I believe are handicapped,
mm-hmm.
122 occupants.
Mm-hmm.
Mezzanine level, assembly, tables and chairs, 720 over 15, net 48 seats. Seasonal roof deck level, assembly, tables and chairs, standing employee, 1,045 square feet, 60 seats, 3 handicapped, 98 occupants.
Yes.
Okay. So based on the numbers submitted on this stamp plan, stamped by a registered architect in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, what is your understanding of what the capacity is, and is there a breakdown by seats, or is it total occupancy, seats/standing, or is it just total occupancy?
The occupancy of this space is broken down per floor.
Okay.
The architect of record, I believe, he revised this plan. He just did not date it. I'm not sure of that, but I'm pretty sure of that.
Okay.
Okay, for the increasing capacity. The capacity is broken down as seating, stools, and standing. In the case of standing, you can have 3 occupants per square feet. I mean, 1 occupant per 3 square feet. 5 for stools, because they're movable, and tables and chairs are 15 square feet. The architect of record, I don't know his name, I didn't read it, maybe Chalinsky? Could be?
Yes.
Am I correct?
Oh, yes.
Okay. He did the calculations to make sure that this could handle the occupancy load that it has. When you do an occupancy load of the space, you would delete, people would be surprised at the number, you would delete things that were counted in the square footage, meaning, let's just say a closet, a fireplace, so on and so forth. Then you can multiply it by the 15, and that could give you the occupancy load. You'd be surprised at the number of occupants you can have in a space. But what goes into it is the width of stairs and so on and so forth, which he is the design professional, that is his responsibility. We accept or reject it, we accepted this plan.
So based on this submitted plan, which was accepted by the city, he has enough square footage and egress for 122 occupants on the ground floor, 62 of whom are in seats. Mezzanine level is 48 seats, so my understanding is there is no standing in the mezzanine level?
That's what it says, yes.
And the seasonal roof deck is 98, 60 of which are seats, which would be 38 standing, correct?
Yes. I looked at this, I would say, a couple of days ago again, and it seemed to be correct to me. Before they reached that.
So I would say, if you have any questions, but my recommendation would be that the capacity on the license be changed to reflect this submitted architectural drawing that has been accepted by the city of Canton.
The only thing that I would want to raise and that I would ask council and Mr. Brush about is in the original hearing, or there were a couple of hearings, almost three hearings by now for Felipe's, the issue with the capacity on the roof deck was sort of mulled over a few times. And so I read the transcript. It's very clearly asked how many people in total at any time would ever be there, and the answer was 60. The commission had originally thought it was 72, but then the licensee and council both said it was 60. Now, transcripts can be very dry, so, I mean, it looks like, from what I read, or it seems like, because it doesn't, it's not, the letters are not attached to it or anything like that, but there were issues with your neighbors with regards to the capacity, and there had been some conversations about that. Can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, we had discussions with the neighbors, with, you know, particularly Mr. DiGiovanni, and although he wasn't in support, he was he expressed concerns about it. And I would say the best evidence that there hasn't been a problem there is that in the 2.5 years it's been in operation, Mr. DiGiovanni has not expressed any concerns to the board, myself, or Mr. Brush, I think, as far as his operation is concerned. As far as the plan that was submitted back then, I'll take some of the blame on that one, because the plan that was submitted just showed the seats, the one that was submitted to the License Commission. That was the plan that was given to me. I probably should have been more vigilant as far as occupancy goes, as far as the standing goes. But it's an unusual operation. It's not a sit-down restaurant. That, you know, a place like Toscano's where you have no one moving around. And they say I'll take some of the blame for that, whereas on the other hand, with the Inspectional Services Department, they were submitting plans that showed the occupancy.
Now, one of the other issues that was raised was with regard to the roof deck becoming sort of a bar rather than what you had expressed, Mr. Brush, in terms of this is a place of food and, yes, alcohol, but it's really not a bar. And then, I mean, I'm all for roof decks, so, but that was one of the concerns of the board in the past in terms of whether this becomes, to use the words that were used in the transcript, watering hole. And so my question would be, why would you need the standing room if, in fact, your operation is for people to go up there and, yes, enjoy the view and have some drinks and food, but not really become a bar?
Well, I mean, we're first and foremost food. We have been forever, and most people who are up there are eating. It's occupied from lunch, you know, through the day. Still, you know, 75% of our business at Felipe's Taqueria, even with the two bars, is still food. I mean, we're a food operation first and foremost. And, you know, the alcohol certainly doesn't really, most sales come in the evening or whatever, people at dinner time. We don't have that many people drinking during the day. But, I mean, the roof is still filled with people, plates, tables, food at all times. I mean, we serve food right up until 2 a.m. on the weekends. The bar closes at 1, so a full hour after the bar closes, we're still serving food. Most of those people are still eating food, so there's food available 100% of the time, full menu, throughout the hours of serving alcohol.
So one of my questions is all the food served on the ground floor, and people have to take it to wherever they're going to sit?
Yes, that's correct.
So there is no food available? There's no food physically available up on floor?
No, people go downstairs, get their food, and come back to the roof. Or someone in the group, if there's three or four people, one person will go get the food while the other people sit up there.
And there is no, like, traditional waiter or wait staff service?
No, there's not.
And how exactly are you going to control the issue of your occupancy on the roof deck? I mean, I'll be very frank with you. I think the first floor occupancy, 62 and 60, is completely reasonable, and you obviously have the space at the huge floor. I am personally concerned as to the roof deck considering the fact that, you know, I just want to make sure, how exactly are you going to control that when you said that you have this ebb and flow? You right now have no standing room on the mezzanine level. It's at 48, and so I want to know what you're going to do in terms of your establishment to make sure that you do not go over that capacity.
There will never be anyone queuing or standing to go up on the roof. That's where the problem was. People waiting to go up on the roof. We had a security guard there, and they were waiting on the mezzanine, particularly that one day when it was, whatever, 40 people up there or whatever. There will never, ever be anyone standing or queuing inside the restaurant anymore. We are in the process of developing and the final stage of testing an app so that anybody who wants to go up to the roof, they'll give us their name, their email, whatever. We'll contact them through their phone, whatever, let them know their space center. But no one will ever be waiting, you know, queuing in a line to get up on the roof ever again. I mean, we've got the people, the counters, the crowd control. We're doing everything to make sure that our capacity never goes over, our occupancy does not go over these numbers.
It won't happen. And you are aware that your occupancy includes employees as well?
Correct.
I mean, I would go with what the architect has submitted.
Okay. Sorry. Is anyone here to speak? Apologize. I'm a little slow this morning.
Yeah.
Could you please state your name for the record?
My name is Phil Cunningham.
Are you a neighbor, Mr. Cunningham?
I am. I represent Victor Church Street, which is the five-story building.
I'm sorry, 50 what?
50 Church Street, five-story building that abuts.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
My name is Phil Cunningham. I work at Trinity Property Management with John DiMaggio. I'm responsible for leasing office space at 50 Church Street, five-story building that abuts to the basement. As the representative here today for 50 Church Street, we cannot support the additional seating requested by the applicant.
May I ask you to speak up just a tad?
Sure. Yeah.
You want to sit down?
I'll back there. I'm fine.
Okay.
In October 2014, we expressed our concerns about the roof deck design. We believe and continue to believe that the design of the roof deck with its bar and many drink rails creates an environment that promotes drinking and gathering. The noise from this type of use creates excessive crowd noise that has the potential to disrupt the working environment of our office tenants that abut the deck. We continue to have this concern, and the applicant's request for additional seating only heightens it. While there have been only minor issues to date, in the event of a tenant turnover, we need to be able to provide future tenants with a space in which they can work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Throughout the licensing process, Mr. Brush has frequently stated that food is the focus of his restaurant, saying at one hearing, this is a restaurant that is about the food. It's not for people in there to drink. It is really nice and creates a full experience to have the options for people to get here in line. His response to our concerns about the roof deck design is similar. The credibility of these statements comes into question when the applicant is now requesting an additional 38 standing seats on the roof deck, a 63% increase. From our perspective, this additional seating request makes clear the use the applicant had always intended for the roof deck, namely a place for people to gather and drink. It is a classic bait and switch. The licensing board's initial approval of the roof deck was based on Mr. Brush's seating plan and description of the use at the time. Mr. Brush knows he wouldn't have been approved for the roof deck with the plan he is requesting today. Finally, as we'll see from Mr. DiGiovanni's letter, which I would like to resubmit today, there is no precedent in the city for the roof deck's proposed seating plan and implied use. In closing, we request the board not to approve the applicant's request for additional capacity because this plan deviates significantly from the seating plan on which the board's approval was initially based, and it significantly increases the risk that the roof deck will disrupt the office tenants at 50 Church Street. I would like to submit my prepared comments to the board today and resubmit John Giovanni's October 28, 2014 letter, which outlined our concerns about the roof deck design as relevant today. Attached to the letter are photos of the roof deck and its proximity to 50 Church Street. Thank you for taking the time to hear my comments this morning.
Thank you. Anyone else? Frank, would you like to say something?
Yeah, it's somewhat water over the dam in that that was these issues and concerns were fully raised back at the original hearing. As Mr. Cunningham stated, there have only been minor issues, and to the point where they could be resolved with Mr. Brush, not involving the license commission whatsoever. If some future tenant does come into the building and is presented with difficulties or nuisances from Mr. Brush's operation, I'm sure Mr. Brush will be contacted to try to remedy them, or if they're not satisfactory to the neighbors, that there'll be a complaint filed here with the Cambridge License Commission, and we can address it at that time. And I think it's somewhat unfair to Mr. Brush, to Mr. DiGiovanni, and I spoke with Mr. DiGiovanni about this, that to take advantage of, take the opportunity to express his prior concerns when there haven't been any changes. And Mr. DiGiovanni and Mr. Brush have some history, litigious history, involving Mr. Brush's prior operation on Mount Auburn Street. So as far as credibility is concerned, I think that there is something there as well. The plan is just a confirmation, and it's not just, I don't take it lightly at all, it's a confirmation of what the inspectional services had approved when he built the property, okay? It wasn't approved by the license commission, and that's our problem here. But I think it's unfair at this time anyway to take advantage of Mr. Brush's problem with the occupancy discrepancies.
My only issue is not with what Mr. Cunningham raised on behalf of 50 Church Street. My issue is, quite frankly, with my concern that the licensee will be able to control the roof deck, quite frankly. I mean, even if he had a certain understanding of his capacity, he was informed on the 19th what his capacity was, and then on the 20th he had the same issue. Now, I understand the misconception and everything else, and I am fine, and I will go on record approving the first floor. I will not go on record approving the roof deck, but the other two commissioners have their vote.
I'm a little concerned since this was brought to light. I would actually like, if we could, to take the matter under advisement to get some more information as to has there been any history of complaints, noise complaints?
So I do know that we do not have, we have a couple of, are they FIDs? FIDs, is that what you call them? When the police get called to the premises or something for noise. But they've resolved at the moment. So it's not, there is no disciplinary history in terms of noise with regard to this licensee.
Chief, it's really been, he's been taken advantage of. If there's a problem there, we'll be back here and feel the full brunt of the board, I think.
And quite frankly, I think, even if we take the roof under advisement, I think we should approve the first floor today.
So, is it my understanding that since October 28, 2014, there's been no formal complaints about this operation?
No disciplinary action.
I'll call it complaints.
I believe there have been a couple of calls, but
the
nothing.
Calls,
yeah.
Okay, that's
but they resolve at the moment. It's not like they go.
And the deck is seasonal?
Yes, it is.
Yes. And the dates being roughly?
I think the dates are weather-driven. We're not the only one in the city that has a similar operation.
So if Christmas time is 50 degrees, you probably have to decorate.
Probably not, because I don't think there's heat up there. Daedalus Restaurant, down Mount Auburn Street, has a similar situation with the deck.
Sinclair,
I think, does as well, and that's Mr. DiGiovanni's operation.
I would approve the plan as with the caveat that sure that we would get complaints about the deck. We can address it. But I would prove us as...
If the bar was approved in 2014, I'd concur with the commission.
Yeah, I would make note of the chair's
concerns.
Worrisome about the ability to manage your own property on that third deck. I think that should be something that should be made internally a high priority so that you don't come back to this board with a complaint.
I hear you loud and clear, Mr. Fisher.
Can you make a note on here about that?
It's up to you. I mean, so the vote will be approved 2-1 with a dissent. My dissent would be approval of first floor and denial of the deck. Mr. Crane, if you want to take that upstairs, then the license commission staff can print you guys a new license.
They'll print it up now?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, switch to our administrative issues. We'll start with Hackney. The process for unused medallions. You know, quite frankly, after listening to everything, I think we shouldn't do anything with regard to unused medallions. We should just leave them as is and let the... Okay. So we will adopt no process at this time. And then the proposed amendments to the Hackney rules and regulations. The last draft that we have is the one from May 18th after our meeting. Nothing really changed in terms of that. The one thing then is, do we want to take out, if you go to page 6, the left, the unused medallion rule? So on page 6, it says Article 4, unused medallion, Rule 1, lapsed medallion used.
Well, let's say strike Article 4. Article 4, Rule 1.
Yeah.
I think you have to keep something about the lost medallion.
Oh, no, we have to keep something about the lost medallion, definitely. I mean, we could also change the lapsed medallion used to just say, you know, the license commission will hold hearing prior to revoking any medallion. Do we really need it? I don't think so, I think.
Is revocation addressed somewhere else? That's a discipline. Violations, penalties, appeals, infraction.
Well, it wouldn't be anything that the licensee does. It would be a process, so do we really need it under the rule?
Yeah, administrative now.
So get rid of the rule altogether?
Yeah, I'd take out the Article 4 rule now.
Okay. Now, the other thing that I wanted to discuss was on page 8, Article 7, Rule 3C, where we have the disqualification for the driving history that shows within the past 7 years. Can we switch that to 4 years? Only because I think what we've seen is that the it's too much time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
So 4 years instead of 7?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Were the only two things that I had an issue with. Otherwise, I think the rules are ready to be amended. Adopted? Yes? Okay. Amended and adopted. Now, the other thing was flat rates and current meter rates. So we heard from both, basically. We either heard to leave them or do something about them. I say we leave as is currently. The only thing that I would consider is getting rid of the flat rates completely and having them run the meter and have the meter rate. But again, I don't know, because I feel like some people supported the flat rate book, in particular the rates to the airport, but then others just wanted the meter to run. So I quite frankly don't know. I'd say we leave as maybe, or I don't know. I totally
disagree. I think the rumors was that it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, because some testified they wanted the book and others testified they didn't want it.
Yeah.
I think there's some testimony too that the book didn't even matter.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't matter, why do we have it?
The flat rate book?
Yeah. You're running off the meter anyway.
And eliminate the flat rate.
Eliminate the flat rate?
Again, this is all going to be market driven.
How about if we put it on the drivers? Well, that would be kind of difficult because so some of our flat rates, like the flat rates from the hotels to the airport, we have on stickers that are on the cabs. And you have multiple drivers driving a cab. So if you have a driver that wants to give a passenger the flat rate, that's fine, but then if you have a driver that doesn't...
What does the sticker currently say? Does it say that the driver has the option to do it?
No.
So if a person gets in a cab and they see this sticker, are they assuming they're on a flat rate to the airport?
Yeah.
If they're coming from a hotel in Cambridge, absolutely. And they're at the hotels as well. Quite frankly, I say we leave it as is until, I mean, because I feel like it was 50-50 in terms of the community.
Yeah, I think you're right. There wasn't any clear consensus about whether to change or not. Remembering that the hotels have a flat rate, they know what the flat rate is.
Yeah.
You're probably got to leave it.
Yeah.
And probably revisiting it in the future.
So we will not amend or touch these. Now we have two applications. Oh, I did want to raise something. One of the drivers had mentioned, or a couple of drivers, and then I think a couple of owners as well, mentioned a rule. I know that one specifically mentioned that Boston Hackney had adopted a rule as to basically not renewing licenses for drivers that don't pay their tolls, and you know this. So I actually reached out to Lieutenant Lima from BPD Hackney, and he says that they have not adopted a rule, that they have talked to MassDOT about the transponder accounts, that they know that it's an issue, but that, you know, to use his words, he says, we are not in the business of managing transponder accounts, handling account discrepancies, or changing the rules. So they haven't really adopted a rule. And quite frankly, I think this is an owner and driver
issue.
Yeah, and I don't think we should get involved. So, but I did want to say that I did reach out.
It's unfortunate, but we didn't change the way the toll for the meter.
Yeah. So just, I just wanted that on the record.
That's an operational issue between employer and employee.
All right. Now, consideration of renewal applications. This is Jean Pointjour, 28517. And he has 4 moving violations, one in 2014, one in 2012, and 2 in 2010.
We just voted.
Yep, we just voted, so I don't think this is an issue now, so approved.
Was that recommended by Officer Zito?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Officer Zito recommends that he be approved for a 1-year probationary period, but if we look at how we just voted,
you're gonna contradict the vote.
So. And then we have Rodney Charles Pompilus, license number 29989. And he again has his violations are from 2014. And one is 2010, again, also 4. So approved?
Approved.
Fee changes to annual entertainment, common victualler, and patio licenses. We first raised this on March 22nd. It was vetted by the city solicitor on May 25th, and our recommendations were as follow: a flat 100 annual license fee for a common victualler, and then $1 per person using only the total indoor occupancy number. Then for the patio, leaving the fee in terms of patios in public property as is, and then charging a $250 for patios on private property. For entertainment, changing the definition of the background music and including that in the CV license fee. So basically not charging a fee, which we currently charge, and only charging the fee if someone, this is the only license that they have, mm-hmm. and then change the definition to recorded music played at or below to change that to above, basically. So we would only charge, we change the category to music played above conversation level and increase that to 500. The disc jockey and karaoke, change that to 500. The magic show, reduce from 500 to 135. Remove the category of phonograph and radio and not charge at all for those. Video screen or film projection, add lottery screen to exceptions of that. And then for TVs, change the fee from $0 per screen to $0 for the first 3 and then $50 for each TV thereafter. The video games, pinball machines, reduced to 100 per machine. The category of theatrical stage or cinema screen, change the cinema screen to 500 and remove also the CV component from those licenses. And then the nonprofit organizations, we had discussed having their entertainment licenses have a separate schedule. The issue here would be how would we implement that in a way that's non-discriminatory. So based on what we had previously discussed, the reasoning included in our previous discussion and the vetting by the city solicitor, I would have vote to approve all except the nonprofit organization stuff and work more with the law department if we are going to implement something. to ensure that we do it in a non-discriminatory manner.
I would concur with that.
Just as a note, I think that that was very problematic for me personally. I think, you know, how do you judge?
Yeah.
I don't know how you're going to do that.
I quite frankly don't think, I think it was problematic for all of us. I think we threw it up there so that we could get their take on it to see if we could do it.
It seemed to me it was kind of willy-nilly before.
Yeah.
I think people just were kind of granted because they were granted and other people weren't. So I concur that we adopt 1 through 8 and number 9 needs more work.
Yeah.
If
at all. And I would say that these go into effect for the licensing year of 2018, so these fees wouldn't be changed until renewal season for those that are current licensees, and for new licensees these fees wouldn't kick in until 2018, which is also part of our discussion of March. I know we're doing it now because we're going into a new e-licensing system. So it's the vote to adopt 1 through 8?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, Coffee Shop LLC DBA Upper West has requested to multiple one-day food and liquor licenses to the private patio on June 25th, 30th, July 1st, July 7th through 9th, 14th through 16th, 21 to 23, 28 to 30, and August 4th to 6th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., and this is in the parking lot adjacent to their property. I would vote to grant as one day, a big one-day license under Section 14, but only for malt and wine, and that's based on the recommendation that we received from what the ABCC informed multiple local licensing boards that these extensions have to be treated as Chapter 138, Section 14, so it's one day rather than an extension of their current license.
Okay.
Yep.
Concur with that.
Okay. As amended. And then because they're a current licensee, I would say that there's no fee for the one-day license, which is our current practice, so. Charlie Moore, on behalf of Turner Construction, has applied for a special noise variance at 145 Broadway to excavate and place a slurry wall panels for foundation from June 20th, 2017 through December 20th, 2017 during the hours of 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. on weekdays. So the variance being only from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. And then 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. on weekends, with the variance being from 7 a.m. to basically 9 a.m. And the reason they need it is because once they start pouring, apparently they can't stop. Departments have any issues. No. He's from Consumer Council. Oh, he's our new intern. So I would go to grant.
Yep.
Okay. So granted. Another special noise variance systems from Paul Vazella, on behalf of Callahan Construction Managers at 2 Layton Street to pour concrete from June 19th through December 20th. This one's actually only for weekdays during the hours of 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., the variance being from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Again, no issues from any of the abutters or other departments. I would vote to grant.
Yep.
That's it. Then we have a one-day malt and wine license from John Loftus at Work Bar on June 28th from 5:30 to 9 p.m. and expected attendance of 99. They will be charging a small fee at the door. And then we have multiple requests for one-day entertainment licenses. Rachel Rocco Burton, on behalf of the Dance Complex and in partnership with the Cambridge Arts Council, has applied for dancing, recorded live music, amplification system, light show, and dynamic show for an outdoor street festival in Central Square, Mass Ave, between Pearl and Brookline Streets on June 23rd. From 5 to 10 p.m., an expected attendance of 1,000. This has been approved by special events. Granted.
Police detail on
that? Yep, mm-hmm. Special events has all the police detail information. I think they also have EMS and everything. Then Julie Berry, on behalf of the Cambridge Arts Council, for Summer in the City Multicultural Performances, Movie Nights events with performers and entertainers, dancing, recorded live music, amplification system, and theatrical exhibition play and moving picture show. Expected attendance of 250 people. This has also been approved by special events. The daytime events are from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. and they are as follows. July 6th, Red Yarn at Magazine Beach. July 11th, All Around This World at Bergen Park. July 13th, Marvelous Marvin at Rose Heritage Park. July 17th, Liar and Believers at Tobin Field. July 19th, Pity Theater Company at Glacon Field. July 25th, Triveni School of Dance at Senate Park. July 27th, Sol y Canto at Dana Park. July 31st, South Coast Historical at Raymond Park. And August 2nd, Passion for Birds at Hurley Park. The movie night events, which are from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., are as follows. August 8th at Rose Heritage Park. August 10th at East Cambridge Savings Bank Lot. August 15th at Volpe National Transportation System Center Lawn. August 17th at Leachmere Canal Park. August 22nd at University Park. August 24th at ECB Inman Branch Lot. August 29th at Palmer Street. And August 31st at North Point Common. I would vote to grant as to all. Granted. And considering that it is the Cambridge Arts Council, I would waive the fee. Have David Fisher, on behalf of the Brazilian Cultural Center of New England, has applied for performers and entertainers, dancing and recorded live music for a cultural demonstration at Lafayette Square on July 8th from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. and July 9th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. with an expected attendance of 30 people, also approved by special events. Granted. Alexandra Zubowski, on behalf of Commonwealth Cambridge, has applied for patrons, dancing, recorded live music, and amplification system for a wedding and reception at Commonwealth Cambridge, 11 Broad Canal, on June 25th from 4:15 to 10 p.m. with an expected attendance of 100 people. Granted. Genevieve Holmes, on behalf of Make Music Boston, a program of Cadence Arts, has applied for recorded live music for festivals with an expected attendance of 300 on June 21st from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at 1 Porter Square, June 21st from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Kendall Plaza, 315 Main Street, on June 21st from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Green Rose Heritage Park, and June 21st from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Joan Lawrence Park. And they have the other city permits required for all of these. So we'll to grant. Mm-hmm. And we have Michael Monestheim, on behalf of CSBA DBA Central Square Business Association, has applied for a one-day Hawker Peddler license for various vendors to sell food, arts and crafts, jewelry, clothing, and other miscellaneous items at the parking lot of 95 Prospect Street on June 25th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. To grant. And that is it for today.